From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, the New York Times calls conservatives divisive, liberals can't stop saying white Christian nationalism, and woke companies are taking big risks. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. On Monday of this week, the New York Times carried an article that called out specific politicians for being divisive, regardless of reality. Here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to introduce our first guest.
Yesterday, the New York Times decided to let us know that political polarization is bad, and that it's Republicans who are driving the divide in this country. Now, even the most casual observer of the legacy media has witnessed the unhinged and often violent rhetoric of the left, including the president. You remember his speech there, his Batman speech in Philadelphia? But according to the Times, it's not the left, but conservative politicians who are using what their experts have dubbed devil terms, which the Times claims stifle debate. Among the statements singled out by the Times was one by Illinois Republican Congresswoman Mary Miller, who tweeted, quote, "Joe Biden's plan to flood our country with terrorists, fentanyl, child traffickers, and MS-13 gang members. If you loved America, you would not do this to the American people. Your number one priority would be to keep them safe," end quote. Actually, we were just talking about that very thing, about what's happening at our southern border. You know, maybe it's just me, but quite frankly, that not only sounds fine, it sounds very accurate. It's an accurate assessment of the situation at the southern border. Well, joining me now to discuss the New York Times hit piece and much more is Congresswoman Mary Miller, a member of the House Education and Labor Committee. She represents the 15th Congressional District of Illinois. Congresswoman Miller, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I have a lot to say about this article, but I'm going to give you the first shot. Your reaction to being singled out, you are in the very first sentence of this lengthy New York Times hit piece. What do you make of it?
Well, we're in a battle between good and evil, and I'm not afraid of them. They are expecting us to sit down and shut up. I'm not going to do that. They want us to join them in denying reality, and I'm not going to do that either. So I don't know. I've taken opportunities to call our country to repent, to return to God, that we need to return to our Judeo-Christian values. I've been on press conferences where I've said that we are in trouble and we are bringing the wrath of God down on us. If you want to look at just how we treat children in our country. And so I don't know if that's behind it, or if they think I'm an easy target, but you know, I'm not. I actually laughed about it. And the other thing that's funny is how few people that I've talked to read it, because they've made a mockery out of themselves. People don't even read their paper.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that. But I do want to point out something. I played this at the top of the program. You were one of the quotes that they pulled from you was this. And you basically just said it. You said, "We are at war for the heart and soul of our country." And then they say you went on to say, "Christ is on our side and we will prevail." Now, I have a clip of President Biden, who they didn't mention in this piece. In fact, they've just in passing mentioned a few Democrats. But I cannot count the number of times I've heard President Biden say we're in a battle for the heart and soul of our nation. Let's play that clip again, please.
This campaign isn't just about winning votes. It's about winning the heart and, yes, the soul of America.
To overcome these challenges, to restore the soul and secure the future of America, requires so much more than words.
Reminder that we remain in an ongoing battle for the soul of America.
I ran for president because I believe we're in a battle for the soul of this nation.
We remain in the battle for the soul of our nation. When I look around at all of you here today, I know we'll win that battle.
Mm-hmm.
just by bringing that up, and he's been doing that since the campaign, we're in a battle for the soul, that evokes a spiritual connotation. So for you to take the next step and say that we rely upon Christ, that we know this is a battle between good and evil, he can get away with it in the eyes of the media, but those who fill in the blanks and realize that, yes, we are in a spiritual battle, they're the ones that the legacy media goes after.
Right. Well, they're counting on, or they're planning on counting that Americans are going to be bamboozled by their disinformation campaign. But I know from traveling around my district, Americans are not. They're going to lose. I believe they know it, and they're desperate. They're name callers. And, you know, there's a lot of scriptures we could use against them, but a tree is known by its fruit, and a politician is known by their policies. And, you know, even when I ran against, I had quite a campaign in my primary. I don't look at other humans as my enemy, but I ran against my opponent's record. Votes become policy, and policy affects people. And if he wants to talk about extremism, look at their policies. Shutting down our energy is going to bring us to our knees. It is propelling China to be the world leader. Opening our border to crime, fentanyl, all that, transgendering our children. These are things that the American people are not in agreement with, and they're going to lose.
You know, the hypocrisy, even in the piece, where they call out you and other Republicans for using labeling, as you said earlier, to try to stifle debate. Yeah. And I'm going to quote from this. We're almost up against a break, but I want to quote, objectors differ not only from Democrats, but from their fellow partisans in their willingness to direct followers to more strident right-wing sources, including The Daily Caller, co-founded by Fox News host Tucker Carlson, Breitbart News, once led by the erstwhile Trump strategist Stephen K. Bannon. And then goes on to say, the most vocal Trump supporters are also much likelier to link to sites with a reputation for circulating conspiracy theories, including Gateway Pundit and the Epoch Times. You know, they're doing the very thing that they're accusing others of doing, of using devil terms to marginalize individuals. And the hypocrisy here is reeking from the New York Times. All right, you hear that music. We're up against a break. When we come back, I want to talk about a report card that has come out that shows America's schools are doing much worse. Now, I'm sure it's because of COVID or global warming, but there might be something else. We're going to have that conversation when we return. Don't go away.
Today, finding a trustworthy news source is harder than ever. That is why Family Research Council created the Washington Stand, an online daily news outlet that provides news and commentary on the most crucial issues of the day, all written from a biblical worldview. Find reliable reporting at WashingtonStand.com so that you know how to stand firm in the midst of the challenges of our day. Again, stay informed by visiting WashingtonStand.com.
Welcome back. This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Good to have you with us on this Monday. I'm continuing the conversation with Congresswoman Mary Miller, a stalwart on Capitol Hill, fighting for faith, family, and freedom. So no doubt the left has taken note of that. And so the New York Times decided to give her a prominent place in their hit piece yesterday, which she should be proud of. She is a member of the House Education and Labor Committee. She represents the 15th Congressional District of Illinois. All right, Mary, the National Assessment of Education Progress, the NAEP, also known as the Nation's Report Card, released its findings for fourth and eighth graders today. Nationally, the average mathematics score for fourth graders fell 5 points since the last time the test was taken 2 years ago, while the score for eighth graders dropped 8 points. This is the largest drop ever recorded. Now, I'm sure, you know, and the Secretary of Education already blaming COVID, and if it's not COVID, it's climate change. But certainly, I think we should take note of the misplaced emphasis that's happening in public school classrooms. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm the mom of seven, grandma of 19. I've spent time in public private, and I home educated my children. And I can tell you, in all those educational settings, the one issue I always had was lack of time. Time to get to all the important things there were to instruct the children, to get, you know, the core subjects mastered, to make sure the kids were mastering those core subjects. Public school is wasting our children's childhood. Our kids are the greatest resource of our country. They are the hope and future of our nation. And this should deeply concern people. The unions are ruining our country. They're ruining our children's education. We need to shut down the Federal Department of Education and return education to where it belongs, to the families being in control and communities. Community schools should be allowed to reflect the values of the community where they are, and parents should be fully engaged in their children's education and the curriculum choices.
Now, Mary, I know that the COVID pandemic, where schools were shut down, obviously had an effect. Of course, we had many of the educational unions that you just made reference to were the ones that didn't want to open the schools back up, and so they kept kids isolated and at home. So I'm certain that that is a factor. So we should be in the makeup process, I mean, you're trying to catch up for that lost time. But this administration seems to be disproportionately focused on sexualizing our kids with all this gender nonsense, and quite frankly, it's not nonsense, it's insanity, as opposed to teaching them to read, to do math. When does this craziness stop? I mean, how far do we have to go before they realize that they are leading our children down a destructive, dead-end path?
Well, this is just evil. The way we treat our children shows where we are as a culture. But the positive thing is the left, the Democrats, the teacher unions that are promoting this have gone too far. People are getting engaged in a way that they never have. I cannot stress to people enough to find out what your kids are learning. Ask to see the curriculum that your kids are learning from. Go to the school and ask to visit and run for school board. And I want to encourage people, Hillsdale College has a free course now, how to run for school board. We have got to hold the people that are running the schools accountable. And in the meantime, if you're able, I encourage people to take their kids out of public school. I want public school to be excellent. I don't want to abandon public schools, but it's a dangerous place for your children to be right now.
Could not agree more. I do not think we should abandon the schools. I think believers who feel called should go into our schools as missionaries. I believe that we should run for school board. In fact, FRC Action has a similar resource available for training people to run. We've trained over 1,500 people to run for the school board. But that said, I do not think we should put our kids in the public schools. Mm-hmm. I think as parents, we are given both the authority and the responsibility to educate our children. We can delegate the authority, but we cannot delegate the responsibility. God will hold us accountable for what our children are taught or not taught. And frankly, given where our public schools are today, for the most part, and I'm speaking generally, our kids would be better off if you just give them a book and sit them under a tree, as opposed to sending them off to a school where they're being indoctrinated.
Or studying a lie. I mean, telling our kids that they came from nowhere, they're not here for any purpose. And I tell people all the time, you can bias materials two ways, by what you include, and then also by what you choose not to include. And we have kicked God, and we have kicked our Judeo-Christian values out of public school. There's teaching our kids skills, but the bigger life lessons that they need to know about, you know, that have to do with our Judeo-Christian values have been removed from the public school curriculum. And that's a reason in itself to take the kids out. And then the hypersexualizing of our kids is like, people run away from it. Take your kids out. My husband and I sacrificed to take our kids out, and we have zero regret. And now all of our children are homeschooling their children or making sure they have a Christian education.
Yeah, I echo that. We're very grateful. We've still homeschooling our youngest, but grateful for that. My wife's done a great job teaching all of our children. I've been a great principal, but she's been a great teacher. Mary, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us, and thank you for standing up. We appreciate it.
Thank you for what you do.
You can find out more about Mary Miller when you go to TonyPerkins.com. That's TonyPerkins.com.
With the increase in text censorship of conservatives and Christians, Family Research Council created a text subscription platform to be sure we don't go completely dark due to censorship. It is important to us that we stay connected with you and that you stay informed. So if we get canceled, you can still find updates on faith, family, and freedom. How? Just text STAND to 67742 to get our text alerts straight to your phone. Stay connected and informed. Text STAND to 67742.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Wednesday of this week, we revisited the left's obsession with calling everyone they disagree with a Christian nationalist, without ever really defining the word. Joining Tony to discuss what Christian nationalism really is and how it's being defined is Dr. A.J. Nolte, an assistant professor at Regent University.
Dr. Nolte, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be with you this evening.
Before I get into this, I want to play a clip from, I play this at the top of the program. This is Laura Barron Lopez. She's a PBS NewsHour White House correspondent setting up a piece on Christian nationalism. I want to play this and get your response.
On the ballot this November are a number of high-profile Republican candidates who are embracing Christian nationalist ideals. That's a belief that America was founded by and for white Christians.
All right. Go for it.
Well, that's a very interesting definition of Christian nationalism. I am somebody who basically for my PhD, I did research on nations and states and all of this kind of stuff. And I remember as I was working on, you know, finishing up my proposal, which is where you try to get people to agree to your project. A very, very lovely woman, you know, a little bit actually left of center, reached out to me and said, are you sure you want to go there with nation and with nationalism and really bring that in there? And the reason she said that wasn't because nationalism is this rail you can't touch in academia. It's certainly not. It's because it's incredibly difficult to define. You get three academics in a room and you can't get them to even agree on where nationalism comes from, let alone what it is. But what I find interesting about the definition that she used there is that she starts off by talking about Christian nationalism. And then she says that it's a belief that America was founded of, by, and for white Christians. Okay, so what we've done here is we're taking Christian nationalism, which in theory at least is a fusion of religion and nationalism, and then we substitute the term white Christians, and that moves the definition of nationalism into a more ethnic category, right? So what they're essentially trying to say is, it's an implication that social conservatives are more sort of favoring the white element. Notice that the white aspect is put first, right? And I think that, you know, there's some very specific signaling that goes there, and maybe we could talk a little bit about this, but, you know, I suppose if you're not doing very well in the polls with Hispanics and African Americans and Asian Americans who are, you know, pushing back against a lot of the woke stuff and gender ideology, you might try to play the race card to divide social conservatives. I'm just not convinced that it's going to work. And as a definition, it doesn't go here.
Well, a couple of points to that. The definition is not consistent. We see varying definitions of Christian nationalism. It's mm-hmm. become like the term evangelical. It's very elastic. They can use it however they want. But she is not alone. And I'm very glad, Doctor, that you pointed this out. The sleight of hand, if you will, or sleight of tongue, by injecting white Christian nationalists, because she's not alone. That happens all the time. It morphs into it. And as a true follower of Christ, nothing is more abhorrent than a dislike or a predisposition to hate your brother because of his or her ethnic background. That's an anathema to Bible-believing Christians. And so you're absolutely right. It's designed to force them to move away from embracing their faith as a pathway to cultural engagement.
Right. Correct. It basically means you either have a bad definition of white, a bad definition of Christian, a bad definition of nationalism, or, and this is what I suspect is going on here, a bad definition of all three.
Let's define what they're concerned about. I think I know what they're concerned about, and that is they're concerned about Christians who allow their faith, their biblical anchored faith, to guide their political engagement. Meaning they won't vote for candidates who want to murder unborn children. Right. They won't vote for candidates who think that gender is like, a store that has 52 different flavors of ice cream. They are not going to support someone who believes in the redefinition of marriage. That's their problem.
Yeah. What's interesting is later on in that interview, and I listened to the interview that clip came from, there's an academic from Calvin University, and she says, well, not everybody who wants to see their Christian values reflected in government is a Christian nationalist. Great. We can agree on that. But then there's not a clear, consistent series of criteria that differentiate a Christian who wants to see their values reflected in government from a Christian who is a Christian nationalist. And this is one of the problems with the definition of nationalism. Nationalism really, when you get down to it, means you've got a nation that you are seeking state power. Okay. And so if you're going to be a Christian nationalist, presumably what you'd be advocating for is some sort of, recognition of Christianity sort of officially in state power in a way that you would sort of have an established church, right? Almost any instance that I can point to where there's Christian nationalism, there's either an established church or there is direct support for Christianity coming from the government. And that support often means government control. Now, you have a candidate, just to kind of drill down for a brief second, you've got a candidate in that list of clips, they show a list of clips in this YouTube video, who says, the government doesn't direct the church directs the government. That, to me, is the opposite of Christian nationalism. Because what ends up happening in Christian nationalism is that the nation ends up essentially controlling what is and what is not Christianity. That is not what we want at all.
Right. Dr. Nolte, we're up against a break. We're going to have to wrap this up, but I want to have a longer conversation, so we're gonna continue this on another day. Thanks so much for being with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You can find out more about Dr. Nolte when you visit tonyperkins.com. And if you would like to know more about who is running for office in your local area, we can help you with that by connecting you with a voting guide. Simply text the word guide to 67742. That's the word guide, G-U-I-D-E, to 67742.
Did you know that pornography, sex trafficking, and abortion are all linked and on the rise across the globe? Issues such as pornography, human trafficking, drug legalization, and abortion are all violations of human dignity and have resulted in the devaluation of human life in our culture. Educate yourself on the harms of these issues so that you can offer hope. Learn more at frc.org/life.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. With the election just over a week away, it's important not to lose sight of what comes immediately after, the lame duck session of Congress. And it's during these sessions that large corporations try and influence Congress the most. Joining Tony Perkins to discuss the influence of money on Congress is Justin Danhof, head of corporate governance at Strive Asset Management.
Justin, welcome back to the program.
Tony, it's always an honor to talk with you.
So earlier this year, it seemed that following the Disney smackdown from the state of Florida, many companies kind of retreated from their woke advocacy. But this disrespect for marriage has kind of drawn them back out from underneath their rocks.
Yeah, I'd say it this way. They retreated maybe publicly, but privately through engagement is where a lot of corporate action actually takes place. And you're right to, hone in on this political election that we have coming up, because that's where decisions like this should be made. Because folks that we elect to state houses and to Congress, they're accountable to who? The people who put them there, the American electorate. I don't remember voting for General Mills to dictate morality to society. Do you? I don't remember, you know, voting for Altria, who's also lobbying on this bill, to dictate morality to society. But that's what we have here, is corporations are deciding that they are the moral arbiters in American culture, and they're really putting the thumb on the scales.
Let me ask you this, Justin, because I've had a conversations with some of the Republican leaders in Congress. If what is being projected right now actually happens, I mean, I don't think there's any that are questioning the fact Republicans will take control of the House of Representatives. It's just a question of how big the margins will be. But there's been and I welcome it, quite frankly. I welcome this drift that has occurred between Republicans and big corporate giants that are embracing the wokeness and doing the bidding of the left. I mean, could this be a little dangerous for corporate America to weigh in a lame duck when in just weeks the Republicans will have control in the House for oversight and possibly begin teeing up regulation for 2024 that could affect business?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And, you know, it's an interesting proposition that businesses really ought to think about. Do they want to be in a position where they are getting so heavily involved in politicized cultural issues that every 2 to 4 years they're dealing after, you know, political elections, they're whipsawing back and forth because the leadership of the political class changes? I don't think businesses want to put themselves in that position. So I honestly think that companies ought to take a step back and realize that the political class can play a significant role in, you know, regulatory reform, tax reform, and specific targeted legislation that could affect business from both the left or from the right. And by engaging in this sphere where they don't belong, the businesses themselves are the ones who put themselves, you know, put themselves, their customers, their employees, their shareholders in this position. And so I would say that the businesses really need to take a look in the mirror and decide if that's a future that they want. Because look, for American capitalism to succeed, that we can't have that. We can't have a change every 2 to 4 years of, you know, action from the left or action from the right dictating, you know, corporate behaviors. It's not going to be a great functioning society that way.
And this is where wokeness takes us. Justin Danhof, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate the great work you guys do.
Thanks. God bless.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.